Oceana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He dives, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Sports Beat, presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some buds. By Labatt Insurance, the agency that rocks. See why at labattinsurance.com. By Goshen Heart and Vascular. Be the hero your heart deserves. Visit GoshenHeartAndVascular.org. And by Blackthorn Golf Clubs, Blackthorn Cart right now. It's available for just $99, which gets you up to 80% off the regular rate to play Blackthorn, including cart, every round, every day, all season long. I'm Darren Pritchett from Eastlake, Ohio, Classic Park, home of the Lake County Captains, the Cleveland Indians affiliate in the Midwest League. Tonight, the South Bend Cubs and the Lake County Captains will play game three of a six-game series doubleheader. Last night, the two teams split the two games, with South Bend winning game two, 11-0. We'll play a single game tonight at 6:30 on WSBT Radio, and then a doubleheader tomorrow at 5 o'clock. That will take the place of Sports Beat once again, and then a single game Thursday morning at 11 a.m., and then it's off to Fort Wayne for a weekend three-game series against the Tin Caps. Well, coming up on the program this evening, it's fun this time of the year. A lot of people starting to project what's going to happen in the upcoming college football season. One writer thinks he's already got the Irish pegged for a bowl game, and it's not the one you would expect. So we'll get into that in just a couple of moments. I've got some college football primer questions as we get you set for the start of the football season. Also, coming up at the bottom of this hour, we'll talk about tanking in Major League Baseball and how the tanking is at an all-time high right now in Major League Baseball. My five question of the day: which five Notre Dame football regular season games would Eric consider a toss-up game right now? And then a very short 6 o'clock hour, we'll talk about Western Conference Finals in the NBA and the NHL. Then it's South Bend Cubs pregame at 6:15, first pitch at 6:30, South Bend at Lake County. One thing worth watching this afternoon in Major League Baseball: we have a perfect game going until the seventh inning. It's Jordan Lyles. Yes, Jordan Lyles. He is a right-handed pitcher for the San Diego Padres. Colorado and San Diego are moving to the top of the seventh inning. Rockies batting. Actually, it is the Padres batting in the bottom of the sixth, my mistake. They're getting ready for the seventh. But the Padres lead 2-0, and Jordan Lyles has not given up a base runner through six innings of play. And he has only thrown 62 pitches for 18 outs, 48 strikes, so he has a chance to make some history with the pitch count in awfully good shape right now. So Jordan Lyles of the San Diego Padres has a perfect game through six innings at home against the Colorado Rockies, who have stumbled as of late. They're down to 23-19. And with the Rockies having lost six in a row, it keeps them very close to the top of the National League West. So we'll keep you updated on if Lyles can keep that perfect game going out in San Diego today. All right. Eric will be joining us in just a couple of moments from our WSBT studios. We have some football conversation to get to later on. I want to talk about tanking, because right now in Major League Baseball, we have some ugly, ugly teams in Major League Baseball. And since 2002, we have not had as many as three teams lose 100 games in a season. But right now, there are a handful of teams on pace to lose over 100 games. The White Sox, the Orioles, Kansas City, the Reds, the Marlins, the Padres, and the Rangers. That's seven teams right now that are on pace for triple digits in the loss column. And most of those teams are rebuilding. Now, Kansas City and Baltimore are not. They're just bad, unfortunately, right now. But the White Sox, the Reds, the Marlins, the Rangers are, I don't know if the Rangers are necessarily in a total rebuild, but they're getting close to that. But we just have some really bad teams in Major League Baseball and some really good baseball markets, which is an absolute shame. Well, since Eric isn't with me right now, we've got some football things to talk to. I'm just going to go ahead and wait on him. We're going to go ahead and get a break out of the way. And when we come back, hopefully Eric will be ready to go. Oh, he is. Okay. Eric is now here, I understand. So forget the break. We'll go ahead and just talk to Eric for a couple of moments. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Well, I want to get to a couple of football topics, then we'll get to some baseball and some other things throughout the program. But was just basically in my hotel room today, just doing some Googling, looking for some ideas. And I just stumbled on across a 24/7 sports story. And this is the type of story, I didn't know who the writer was, so I don't take it very serious. But at the same time, I thought it was worth talking about. This is just one person's opinion. But in this article, he put together projections for the bowl season, which is kind of funny on May the 15th, considering so many things are going to happen between now and even the start of the season that will jumble everything. But this particular writer has Notre Dame taking on Maryland in a bowl game. First off, that doesn't sound good for the Irish chances this year. And that game would be at Yankee Stadium in the Pinstripe Bowl. Now, that's not necessarily the type of expectations we have for this Notre Dame football team. That's why you take our opinion and this guy's opinion with a grain of salt. We just offer opinions. We'll see what actually happens when the football is put into the air. But I guess the first question, pretty simply, is using that as a barometer, that the Pinstripe Bowl is Notre Dame's destiny, should we have bigger expectations than that?
I would think so, because what that translates to, Darren, is a 7-5 record or worse. And so if Notre Dame goes 7-5 next year without, you know, half the defense getting abducted by aliens, then that's bad for Brian Kelly. That's bad for Notre Dame. And then this guy should take advantage of the new sports gambling laws, because this team, I don't even think its floor is 7-5. So that's a very odd pick. But, you know, again, we're not always sure who's doing these. That's the one thing that's kind of fun about this time of year, is there's a lot, sure, of these lists, and some of them are incredibly well-researched and some of them are incredibly poorly researched. But that is really a strange prediction.
Well, Eric, just taking out injuries, which are unpredictable and they can change any season, just looking at the roster and the opponents, to me, the base floor for this team is 9-3. That's what type of expectations I have for this football team. Now, a lot of things have to fall into place for that to become reality, including a better passing game, the defense continuing to take steps forward, inching closer to being a top 25 defense, which of course is pretty necessary if you want to get a playoff spot in college football. You know, feel like everything else is in pretty good shape. You know, the question marks here and there with any football team. But, Eric, I tell you what, this is a defense that has a chance to be special. The running game should be still really good, not probably as good as last year because that was high-end good. And if the passing game can just take a few steps forward, all of a sudden you're in really good shape. Now, there's some landmines along the way, including the first game against Michigan. Irish are now an underdog, in some people's opinion, by 3 points, and Shea Patterson became eligible to play quarterback for Michigan this year. Virginia Tech's not going to be easy. We can list several games, which we will in the toss-up category when we get to the My 5 question of the day. So, to me, Eric, 9-3 should be bottom of the barrel for this football team. How off am I in that analysis?
Well, you know, when I've been forced to be a psychic during my chats in spring, I've said 10-2 is what my expectation will be. And then, you know, I'll put that in pen or change it and put it in pen in August based on what I see in practices then. But I saw a lot of progress on the defensive side of the ball in the spring. I saw a better passing game. Again, it's difficult to test it when your quarterback's in a red jersey. Your quarterbacks are in red jerseys. You know, and so I don't know. I think it's really difficult for me to come up with a scenario. I guess if you said Notre Dame lost to Michigan, Stanford, USC, Virginia Tech, and Florida State, you could get to 7-5. But I just don't expect that from this football team. I just think the defense is going to be too good, and it's going to make up for some maybe shortfalls on offense that last year's defense couldn't.
So let's just play along with this person's opinion. It is Pinstripe Bowl bound, and you offered some teams that could give the Irish trouble. Let's just look inside that Irish locker room for a second. If, for the sake of argument, Pinstripe Bowl was reality, what is your best guess to what dropped them into that particular bowl game? Are there parts of this team that you feel like would be the most obvious that possibly went haywire?
Well, I would think that
passing game improvement comes to mind.
Yeah, but I mean, the one thing is you have some insurance there because you have Ian, a more mature, more college ready Ian Book. If Wimbush slides, you also have Phil Jakovic on the roster, and that's why it's hard to see that slide all the way down to 7-5. You know, I guess. Okay, so we're taking out injuries or we're not?
Yes.
Okay. Whew.
It's hard to find, I know.
Yeah, because the defense is difficult. I guess if the pass rush somehow regressed and Clark Lee didn't know how to call a defensive game and the special teams regressed, I have a hard time coming up with scenarios where that's going to happen. That the offensive line was just a disaster. I guess you could get to 7-5, you know, by that happening. So
okay. Well, I think that sort of sets the table, you struggling to find answers to possibly how off this projection is. Now, we can save this, and if they go 7-5, we'll look dumb and we'll take responsibility for it. But sitting here on May the 15th, I thought that was so outlandish that that's why I wanted to bring it up, just to see if we can come up to conclusions to how we would possibly get to that point.
That sounds good to me.
People transferring might be the best answer I can come up with.
Well, they're going to have a couple of more.
But I mean big-time transfers, like really important people leaving. I'm saying that with tongue-in-cheek, obviously. Okay, let's get to a couple of college football primer questions just for fun. We'll bring back a take-it-or-leave-it segment, Eric. Let me start with this. Alabama and Clemson both make the college football playoffs again. Take it or leave it.
It's difficult to think of a scenario where they wouldn't make it. I don't think that there's... You know, they would have to really underachieve when you think of all the talent that is on both those teams. And then you think about, okay, who's the second best team in there? I think, again, even if Georgia is as good as we think Georgia might be, I think the SEC will probably get two teams in again. I guess if the committee only wanted to give it to one SEC team, maybe that's a way Alabama could miss it. And then who's going to challenge Clemson? Is it Florida State? Is it somebody else? Isn't Miami coming from the other division? I like that. I'll take that.
So let me ask a follow-up question. Since we have to follow the ACC with Notre Dame being associated with that conference, I mean, the ACC was really, really good last year. Is it going to take a step back this year? Do you feel like there could be parallel in terms of the quality of play and teams coming out of the ACC?
Well, I'm thinking, how is it going to take a step back? Have you seen any of these mock drafts, way too early mock drafts?
There's a lot of ACC guys.
There's a lot of their whole defensive line is on there. Plus one of their offensive linemen, I think a couple other players. So at the very top of the ACC, and then you think Miami is a team that's coming on. You think about Florida State with a new coach and having kind of gathered its legs back under it. You know, there's expectations for Wake Forest to maybe win seven games. Not challenge, but
Without their quarterback, that's quite an improvement.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's, I don't see, you know, I would think Virginia Tech is going to be very competitive.
NC State's got Finley still.
NC State's still got Finley. They lost some good defensive linemen, but they, and Nyheim Hines, but.
Bradley Chubb.
Yeah, Bradley Chubb, but they still have, and the rest of their defensive line, I think there were like two or three of the others got drafted as well. But, I mean, there's still a lot to like in the ACC, so.
And Florida State's Florida State. They had a little off start to last year, but I'm sure it won't take long for them to bounce back.
Well, especially with a new coaching staff, I think there's going to be some energy there. But, I mean, Clemson's a lot of people's number one team in those way too early top 25s. I think that, you know, Miami's number eight in the ESPN, way too early top 25. Trying to see who else is up there. Virginia Tech is 15. So
that's going to be a challenging game in Blacksburg.
Florida State 18. So I mean, there's a bunch of teams right there. There's four ACC teams in the top 18 right there. Yeah.
You answer my question.
Okay.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay.
And I'm with you. Alabama and Clemson both make the playoff once again. All right. Now to this question. Take it or leave it. The Stanford-Notre Dame game in October will be a college football playoff elimination game. It could.
It could, because Notre Dame can't afford to lose that game. And because I think, again, they're going to get bit in November. And if they want to be 11-1, that loss can't be to Stanford, because there's just... I think the USC game out on the coast with all that traveling in November is more dangerous than playing Stanford at home in October. Stanford's offense is going to be pretty good. They're going to have Bryce Love back. They're going to have KJ Costello. They've got really good offensive linemen. They're going to have a lot of big wide receivers. Where I think they took a big hit was on defense, because they had a handful of good juniors like Harrison Phillips and Reed, the safety, come out early. And I don't think they have those building blocks on defense to get. And they weren't all that great defensively last year. In the Notre Dame game, they were. But most weeks, they weren't very good defensively. And so I just don't think Stanford is going to be able to win that game in October. So, you know, and then would that eliminate Stanford at that point?
I'll say no because of this. They have San Diego State at home.
Right.
They have USC at home. They've had pretty good success against USC through the years. If I remember correct, they lost at the Coliseum to USC last year. But they're going to take on a USC team very early on in the post-Sam Darnold era. So that could be a factor. Then they host UC Davis, and they're at Oregon. So there's a very good chance they could be 4-0 going into that Notre Dame game, which means it's not an elimination game for them. Their elimination game could be November 3rd when they go to Seattle to take on the Washington Huskies. Otherwise, they have a chance to go through their schedule pretty cleanly. They've got Utah at home. They got Washington State at home. They go to UCLA, Cal, and Arizona State, but those are pretty winnable football games, especially with Costello at quarterback for Stanford. So, Eric, to me, it's not going to be an elimination game for Stanford, but I love your way of thinking about November. There has to be as little bruises on the resume as possible for Notre Dame going to November with that travel. I mean, the Michigan game really sets the tone for the Stanford game. If you lose to Michigan, then all of a sudden that Stanford game kind of becomes an elimination game for Notre Dame, considering what lies ahead in November.
Yeah. Yeah. The Michigan game is going to be huge, especially with Shea Patterson now as part of that mix. I know that that's probably why the line changed and Michigan became a favorite, slight favorite in that game. The Shea Patterson is a difficult read, though, because you're really banking on his potential to all kind of come out this season, which it very well may. But I mean, Jim Harbaugh has either had Andrew Luck or he's been kind of mediocre, where it's been concerned with quarterbacks, where he really hasn't had a top 40 guy in passing efficiency. So is Shea Patterson fall in the Andrew Luck category, or you know, does he get tamped down, his potential get tamped down by Harbaugh? It's hard to say because, I mean, I think, you know, I think your son could have coached Andrew Luck in college and him being in the top 10 in passing efficiency, don't you think?
Well, I think a lot of people would have had success with Andrew Luck, it's fair to say.
And I think your son would be a good coach.
Well, the thing is about Shea Patterson, he has all the potential, he has the high ceiling, but he's only played a handful of games, and Eric, there were a lot of turnovers in those games. He had more interceptions than games played, so I'm not saying he's not a good player. He has the potential to be an outstanding college football player, but right now he is turnover-prone heading to Michigan. And until that is rectified, I think that is fair to label him in that fashion, and turnovers lose football games on the road.
Amen.
Okay, next up in our college football primer, take it or leave it questions. Scott Frost at Nebraska, his first year with the Cornhuskers, will win more games than the new head coach at Texas A&M, Jimbo Fisher.
I don't think that that's going to happen. I'm looking at Nebraska's schedule right now, and they don't have a killer non-conference schedule. They have Akron, Colorado, and Troy, and those are all at home. And they do play in the weaker of the Big Ten divisions, but they have some crossover games that are difficult. They have Michigan State, they have Ohio State, and Michigan all in their crossover games. And Ohio State and Michigan are on the road. You know, their defense was actually way better than A&M's last year, which is hard to fathom because you don't think of Nebraska having good defenses recently. I think Scott Frost will transform the offense, but I like A&M's chances of winning more games than Nebraska.
You know, I'm going to go the other way just because of the division Nebraska is in. And you take a look at A&M. They get a ho-hum first game against Northwestern State. Then they take on Clemson at Kyle Field. Now, it's a home game. That's a tough second game. Your fourth game is at Alabama. So, all of a sudden, the mental state of A&M could be a little shaky after possibly losing two of their first four. They have tricky road games against South Carolina, Mississippi State, and then a third consecutive road game, Eric, and it's at Auburn. It's tough enough beating Auburn and Jordan Hare, but to do it in a third straight road game, I think that hurts your chances. You got LSU at home, so that helps there, but I think there's a potential for A&M to be a four-loss team. Nebraska's in that 3-4 range, so I'm just going to roll a little bit of the dice and say Nebraska, who doesn't have to play Clemson and Auburn and Alabama, two of those three on the road, maybe they'll have a slight advantage and they'll figure out a way to win nine games this year. That's a tough start. Two of your first four against two college football playoff teams as you try to rebuild. All right, the next college football primer question, Eric, take it or leave it. The winner of Texas-Oklahoma decides who wins the Big 12 regular season title.
I don't think so. I think Texas may win that game and Oklahoma be the better team. I'm not going to rule out TCU in the Big 12.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to go with that. I'm leaving that.
Yeah, I'm going to leave it too for that same reason. TCU to me is more of a factor than Texas. Oklahoma State just has not been able to get over the hump to be that factor team atop the standings. They always have a hiccup or two along the way. So I agree with you. I'm going to leave that. Oklahoma is the best team in the conference, and even if they get upended by Texas in that rivalry game, it'll probably come down to Oklahoma and TCU. Finally, at the end of the year, Michigan's Jim Harbaugh's hot seat will be warmer than LSU's Ed Orgeron.
I'm going to leave that. I think Ed Orgeron is one of the worst Power 5 coaches.
Agreed.
And I think Harbaugh is decent. And I think Harbaugh, with Don Brown as his defensive coordinator, That's money in your pocket. At least you're going to be good on one side of the ball no matter what. And they lost a lot of people last year and were very good on defense. They were one of the top five defenses in the country with pretty much having to rebuild their entire defense. So, yeah, I'm not, no way.
We said it the day this all unfolded. LSU just seemed to make a poor choice in the new head coach. Their standards should be higher. Now, maybe some of the premier coaches did not want to go there. That's hard to believe. But at the same time, they kind of went with the local guy, hoping he could turn it around, known for being a really good recruiter. But the X's and O's, very, very questionable. So from where LSU has been, this was a step back in terms of a hire, and I think that's proven out to be an accurate statement so far through the Ed Orgeron era. You know, I think Harbaugh will find a way to have a good season. I don't know if they're going to get to double digits. I still think they got to figure out a way to beat some of their rivalry game teams, Ohio State, Michigan State. Hey, let's throw Notre Dame in there. They've got to go to South Bend to take on the Fighting Irish. So there's still some obstacles for them to get to the 10-win mark. I don't think LSU has a chance to get to the 10-win mark. And I think LSU fans, if they're not antsy already, not a very good performance in their bowl game against Notre Dame, that seat's going to get hot very, very quick. And even though Harbaugh has all this other stuff going on and people may get tired of it, I still think he gets a little bit more the benefit of the doubt being a Bo guy and being a Michigan guy. Fans, I think, for the most part, will hold on to hope that Jim will be able to turn it around now that he has his quarterback, supposedly, which what he has been missing. I think Michigan fans kind of not totally reset the clock on Harbaugh, but I think getting that quarterback now gives him a couple of more years to prove that he can be the guy at Michigan to not only get to double digits, but eventually take down Ohio State. And you got to do that at some point, even though they almost did it 2 years ago. If ands and buts don't count, you got to beat them. That's all there is to it. That's part of the reason why you get hired at Michigan, Eric, is you got to beat Ohio State, and you can have success against everybody else, but at some point, you better beat Ohio State.
Right, and their crossover games include Wisconsin this year, and that's a difficult crossover game for Michigan.
Sure.
But I just think Harbaugh's act isn't going to help him out in the hot seat regard, but I still think he'll be a good enough coach to win a lot of games. Orgeron's so butchered that whole Matt Canada situation last year.
Yeah.
Goes and hires a tremendous offensive coordinator, innovative guy that really should have helped LSU's offense, and then he kind of ties his hands and takes the power away from him, and then they mutually part ways at the end of the season, and that is a bad sign for LSU.
And here are the key games for Michigan. Of course, they come to South Bend to take on the Fighting Irish September 1st. They get Nebraska at home September 22nd. Hey, Northwestern's always a tricky game. They will take on the Wildcats in Evanston on September the 29th. You've got Wisconsin at home October 13th. You go to East Lansing, rivalry game October 20th against Michigan State. Now, Eric, they do get Penn State at home November the 3rd, and then they wrap things up with the Ohio State game in Columbus on November the 24th. So there are quite a few toss-up games on the old Michigan schedule, making it pretty difficult from my standpoint for them to get to 10 wins unless Shea Patterson really puts the team on his shoulders. Now, they're going to have a really good defense, we would expect, but the offensive line has some question marks, and they better take care of that to give Patterson a chance to have success.
Right, and that's the thing. How much better is the offensive line? I saw Angelique tweeted a story from Detroit about, you know, the player saying that Ed Warner was a miracle worker with the offensive line. I need to see
hold
that.
Hold your horses on that.
Yeah, and again, what's Shea Patterson going to see in game one against Notre Dame and every team until Michigan does something about it is he's going to see a loaded box. They're going to say, they're not going to believe that Michigan can run the ball. So Notre Dame will... I'm sorry, they'll see the opposite of a loaded box. They will see Notre Dame, you know, bringing their safeties, putting them in pass coverage and saying, sure, okay, try to run against our front seven without any safety help there, without us bringing a safety into the box. So they will challenge Michigan's running game. And Michigan's running game wasn't very good last year. So opposite of the loaded box, Darren, I screwed that up.
That's okay.
But that's how teams will defend them and then they will also bring a lot of pressure on Shea Patterson to see if that offensive line can handle it. I think Shea Patterson is a really talented quarterback. I just don't know that he has more talent around him on the Michigan offense than he did at Ole Miss's offense.
Mm, interesting. That's some college football primer questions. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser, Laban Insurance, Blackthorn Golf Clubs, Blackthorn Card, and by Goshen Heart and Vascular. Coming up in a couple of moments, tanking is the rad thing in Major League Baseball, and we have some teams with some horrible records right now, and we are on pace for one of the worst seasons in baseball history in terms of lack of success by a whole bunch of teams. Some of them are tanking, some are not. So we'll get into that conversation coming up. We have a Notre Dame football My 5 question of the day in about 20 minutes. Eric will take a look at the regular season matchups he would consider toss-up games right now. That's coming up from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Budweiser's weekday sports beat continues on WSBT Radio. Eric Hansen is the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. Back in our WSBT studios, I'm Darren Pritchett with the South Bend Cubs in Eastlake, Ohio. Cubs and captains tonight, pregame, 6:15, first pitch, 6:30, Ricky Tyler Thomas on the mound for the South Bend Cubs. Well, we are going to talk a little baseball here in a second. One thing I just noticed on Twitter a couple of moments ago, Adam Rittenberg, who writes for ESPN about college football, he spoke with former Notre Dame cornerback Nick Watkins, a graduate transfer. He's taking an official visit to West Virginia, according to Adam. That's going to happen this week, and he plans on taking unofficials to TCU, SMU, and Houston. And he's going to do all that after he graduates and returns home to the state of Texas. Pretty good choices for Nick Watkins, Eric, and I would assume that he was a guy that is going to be in demand over the next few weeks. And let's face it, Notre Dame would love to still have him on the football team, but there were just too many options, and he just had really a really difficult time breaking into the top two on the depth chart right now at the cornerback position.
Yeah, Pro Football Focus had a really interesting stat on Troy Pride, and Troy was the guy that overtook Nick Watkins kind of mid to late year. And Troy Pride, according to Pro Football Focus, allowed 20 yards after the catch total for the season.
Wow.
Which was the third best in all of the FBS last year.
That's pretty impressive.
So Nick Watkins was up against it because you think about Julian Love, who's getting All-American love in some of these preseason All-America teams, and Sean Crawford, who's really come back even stronger from his two leg surgeries. There's just so much talent at cornerback, and Dante Vaughn, a guy that's kind of surging. So Nick Watkins wanted to be a full-time cornerback. He would have had a role on this team. And I don't blame him for looking elsewhere. And I know that Brian Kelly doesn't either. That was a mutual parting of the ways and no toxic kind of aftertaste there. It's just a kid that wants to play and thinks he has a future on the next level, and he very well might. I mean, he was playing at a very high level early in the season.
So Nick Watkins looking for places to go. West Virginia, stop number one for the Irish corner. We're going to shift gears to baseball. How about this? There are seven Major League Baseball teams on pace to lose 100 games. From the past seven seasons, there haven't been seven teams that have lost 100 games. Now, some of these teams stink. Other these teams are trying to lose on purpose, or as we've now started to call it, tanking. You look at the seven teams. The White Sox are 10-28. They are in a total rebuild. They have shipped off so many assets and gotten young players back. The hope is the Eloy Jimenez, the Blake Rutherfords, the Dylan Cease, the Michael Kopechs turn into quality Major League players. And I think there's no doubt Eloy Jimenez is going to be an all-star type player. Rutherford's doing very well at high A, hitting well over 330. Kopech seems to have the makings of a top-line starter, a strikeout guy who throws extremely hard. Cease, who I saw in South Bend, I'm still not sure what they have in him. He might be a reliever. Just my opinion. Haven't seen him in probably 10 months now. That was just my opinion watching him. But the Cubs never let him pitch. The White Sox are, so maybe the outcome will be different. White Sox, total rebuild. They tanked, and now they're trying to rebuild it. The Baltimore Orioles are not tanking. They're just really bad. 13-28, too bad for Trey Mancini, the former Irish star with that Orioles team. The Kansas City Royals are not tanking. They're just not very good. They lost a lot of key parts. They're 13-27. It's kind of a quiet rebuild in Kansas City. The Reds, I'm not sure what we call it because they have not traded well. They have traded assets, and not many of the people coming back are helping them. So I hate to call it a rebuild because they haven't done a very good job. They're trying to lose to improve themselves, get rid of salary. But you know what? You're not totally rebuilding, Eric, until you get rid of Joey Votto's contract. There is no reason for the Cincinnati Reds to have a $25, $30 million player at this point. And you could argue anytime with their market size. So I don't feel sorry for the Cincinnati Reds at this point. Until they do something with Votto, they're really not rebuilding, in my personal opinion. Miami, total shutdown of their operations. They got rid of their all-star outfielders. They're rebuilding. They're 14-26. And Texas are 16-26. Those teams are not tanking. So there's a handful, Eric, of teams that are not trying to win right now.
You know what, Darren? The Dodgers are 16-24, 40 games in. So they're on a pace to lose 96 games. They're not too
far. Isn't that something?
That is. They're not taking.
Well, their pitching has fallen apart. They played Arizona a lot early on in the season. That has not helped. And also, you got to take a look. They lost their all-star shortstop, Corey Seager, for the season. Tommy John surgery. Yasiel Puig has not homered so far this year. He has taken a step back. He's been on the DL, so it's been a train wreck out in Los Angeles. And all the talk about go get Manny Machado, he's not going to fix many problems on that baseball team. So, Eric, bottom line, I just read you some numbers. A lot of these teams aren't even trying to win. Good for the game, or do you respect what they're trying to do?
I don't think it's good for the game, and I would be really upset if I were a season ticket holder and they traded all the assets away and you knew that they weren't trying to field a competitive team. Why would you even be a season ticket holder? Why would you go to the games other than to be outside and, you know, be in the weather? It's totally foreign to me. I would be very upset if, you know, my favorite team, which is St. Louis, if they were doing that. I'm upset enough that Mike Matheny's their manager, let alone their team.
Gosh. Well, all those people in these markets that go to games are taking their iPads and reading IndyInsider.com at the ballpark for enjoyment, obviously.
Okay, that's cool.
That's a good reason, right? Well, it's a shame this is happening. And let's be perfectly honest. It's happening because the Chicago Cubs pulled it off and won the World Series doing it. They tanked. They didn't want to win. You take a look at their numbers. In 2012, they won 61 games. They won 66-13, 73-14. When you have a major market team that has the money to build a quality team and to go out and be really good in the scouting department, you can throw a lot of money at it. To have to go this route, to me, it's disappointing for the game. Now, the end result is you won a World Series, and Cub fans don't care how it got done. They got the World Series. But to me, I just don't understand how you get to that point when you're a major market team, when you have advantages over everybody else in the industry. If the Yankees or the Red Sox or the Cubs or the Dodgers make a huge mistake in a signing, it's not a big deal because they can just go spend more money and fix it. The Yankees have done that for so many, many years. And I just look at this, Eric. When you're a medium market team, you don't have the money of all those teams. You don't have many of the advantages of all those teams. You just have to outsmart those particular teams. And I look at a medium market team, and I'll use them as an example. They have never tanked. They have never not tried to win. They have just recycled through a pretty good amount of time. Since 2000, this medium market team, in 18 years basically, has had 10 90-win seasons. They have had a winning record 17 out of 18 years. In today's game, that's pretty remarkable, in my opinion. They have been in the top two of their division in 14 of 18 years. Since 2000, this media market team has won 9 division titles. They have been to the playoffs 12 times in 18 years. And as I wrap up this particular resume of the team, if I were to tell you that your baseball team would win 2 World Series every 13 years, would you take that?
I would take that.
That's a heck of a run. I mean, that's a phenomenal run, in my opinion, with the competitive balance in Major League Baseball to win 2 in 13 years. I think that is awfully good, considering you have never tanked, you've never had top 10 picks since 2000 to try to rebuild your baseball team. It's just a team that has had success taking the resources that they have, drafting and developing well, trying to find the right free agents to mix in with the young talent, and they have had very good success. Can you take a guess who that team is?
You know what? I don't know. I was going to say St. Louis, but I don't think that's...
You're right.
Oh, it is St. Louis. Okay.
That's exactly right. And they're usually between 10 and 15 in payroll, but they have figured out a way to develop talent. They don't pick in the top 10. And how many times have you seen 12th round picks or 18th round picks or even 40th round picks make it to their roster? And I think that shows you, if you make smart decisions, you never have to tank. If you have smart personnel in your front office, you never have to tank. This is a medium market team having great success. So that's why, to me, Eric, I appreciate what the Cubs and the Astros have done. They did it their way. They won, and that's all that matters to their fans. I am not downplaying it, but I just think this is one example of showing these teams have so much more assets than the media market teams, and yet they are able to have consistent success, which makes me ask the question, why would they ever have to tank? They have more resources and more advantages over teams in the middle of Major League Baseball.
I don't know. I mean, there's so much stuff about baseball this year that's weird. All the strikeouts, the tanking. I mean, it's kind of depressing.
Well, I think it is, too, and that's why I'm bringing up just an example. Do you really have to do this? I mean, again, just as the sake of argument, is Theo Epstein smart enough to do this without tanking?
Well,
his reputation in Boston says absolutely yes, he could pull it off.
Right. You know, the thing is, if they didn't tank, would they have gotten Chris Bryant, for example?
Absolutely not.
Yeah. And
no.
Would they have won a World Series and been this good without Chris Bryant?
Well,
they have other really good players, but
they do, absolutely. Here's the question. Rounds 2 through 40, how well drafted under Theo Epstein? How many of those guys have made it to the majors? They have taken advantage of those top 10 picks. And you know what? You deserve credit, because you can pick the wrong guy in the top 10, as the White Sox taking a reliever, basically Carson Fulmer of Vanderbilt, hoping he'd be a starting pitcher. That's probably going to be an absolute bust. So you can't take away from the picks that they've made. They have absolutely had home runs with all of their guys in the top 10. So that cannot be lost, because the White Sox, they probably kicked that pick. And that's going to be a wasted pick that could have went a direction that could help them in this rebuild. So there's an example of a major market team absolutely flubbing, it looks like, their first pick. And when you get in the top 10, you just can't afford to miss. I mean, that is a huge advantage over everybody else. And despite all the other good thing the White Sox have done, they still traded away a top 10 prospect right now in Fernando Tatis Jr., who we saw in Fort Wayne last year, and they got basically a bullpen pitcher for him in James Shields. That was a huge mistake. And despite all the other good things they probably have done, that is a big-time miss, again, by a major market team that has all the resources where those type of things should not happen.
Right. Yeah. You know, and one way that some of these big market teams could have been more competitive without tanking is being more savvy in the international market.
You bet. The Cubs have been awesome in that area.
Yeah.
Absolutely awesome.
Right. There are certain teams that are really good in that area, and there are certain teams that just don't invest or just aren't very good at being able to harvest those international players. And we're not talking about the big dollar guys like Otani or, you know, we're talking about other players that are in the internet. Like Carlos Martinez came through that way to St. Louis. He's the ace of the staff, has the lowest ERA in the National League, and he was not a, you know, really expensive signing for them. They didn't have to put a lot of investment in that, and there are a lot of great players that come to the majors just that way.
Well, the Cubs basically got to the World Series with the help of trading Gleyber Torres, who was an international free agent signing, an awesome signing. And Eloy Jimenez, another signing from that same class in 13, helped them get Jose Quintana. Now, that deal, that'll be overanalyzed over the next few years, obviously, in the city of Chicago. But the free agent, I should say, the international market has been really good. The Cubs have nailed a lot of really, really high-end signings. It's just figuring out the ability to draft veteran spots in the Major League Baseball draft. They have spent a lot of picks on pitching the last 2 years, and it's going to be very interesting to see what they get out of it. Right now, there aren't many prospects worthy of big-time trades in this system, and they're going to have to reload over the next couple of years. So this tends to be, in my opinion, a really big draft for the Chicago Cubs. They've got to start getting some resources, talking to the voice of the Iowa Cubs. He says they've had some really good international signings that will start popping up once again, so that's a good sign. But to me, the draft, this is going to be a big one for Chicago because they need those assets to make deals to enhance this nucleus that is going to be together for a few more years at the very least, and you want to take advantage. And by the way, White Sox drew 1.63 million fans in 2017, their lowest since 1999. And that's a shame. That is really, really a shame. And fans aren't going to pay to watch their team be awful. And you know what? You can't blame them one bit. We'll take a timeout. My five question of the day coming up in a couple of moments. We'll do a little shorter break here so we can get into my five next on WSBT.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section.
Well, Tom Noy will have a column on Indy softball coach Deanna Gumpf. The Irish snuck into the field of 64 again, and they play this week down in Lexington, I believe. And then we'll have the Penn Girls Track Sectional and much, much more.
And Eric Jordan Lyles, the pitcher for San Diego, lost his perfect game after 22 batters with one out in the eighth inning. The Rockies got a single and then a walk. Perfect game is over. Padres lead the Rockies 4-0, top of the ninth. We'll do the My 5 question of the day after a CBS Sports update here on 96.1 WSBT South Bend, the sports leader.
One question, five answers. This is the My 5 question of the day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
All right, Erica stuck around for a shortened version of the 6 o'clock hour right before South Bend Cubs baseball. The five Notre Dame football regular season games that you would consider a toss-up game right now, I guess we'll rank number one being the biggest toss-up game. We start with number five.
I'm going to go with Florida State. It's November 10th, a night game at Notre Dame Stadium. It is the only home game Notre Dame has after October 13th. I think Florida State will have a lot of its, growing pains with a new coach iron out by the time it comes to Notre Dame Stadium, and they'll catch Notre Dame in a great stretch when Notre Dame will have been playing on the road, going out to San Diego to play Navy, then going to Northwestern, and then right after that, two more games on the road.
Well, the set you gave is good for tailgating.
Yes.
Better weather.
Yeah.
All right, number four.
Number four, I'm going to go with Stanford. That's a home game on September 29th. Again, I think that Stanford's defense is, it's going to take them a while to kind of find a rhythm with their defense. And I think surely in September 29th, Notre Dame will have a powerful enough offense to challenge them. But I still think Stanford is always a tough game for Notre Dame.
Going through the toss-up games on the Notre Dame schedule, number three.
A road game on October 6th, the next week, against Virginia Tech.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I just think that atmosphere, and again, Virginia Tech's got a really good offense coming back. They lost a couple really good players early to the draft on defense, but Bud Foster always has that defense at least respectable, if not way above respectable. So that'll be a tough game there.
And that'll be a big test for the way Notre Dame has reshaped themselves after the loud atmosphere at Miami. That's going to be a tough
one. That's true. Yep, that's a good test there.
Number two.
Number two, I think when you look at the way too early top 25s, this is the team of these five that is usually at the bottom, and that's USC. But again, it's on the road. It'll be Notre Dame's fourth road game in a five-week stretch, and I think that's going to be a real test for Brian Kelly's team. And again, two of those, you know, you're going West Coast, then home, and then back to the East Coast, then back to the West Coast. It's a lot of cumulative effect on the Notre Dame football team.
And the number one toss-up game on the Irish schedule is
that first game of the year, Michigan. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that game. Don Brown and his defense, Shea Patterson, Clark Lea calling his first game as defensive coordinator. We get to see what Brandon Wimbush looks like kind of in his remake against, I mean, you're not going to have to wait to find out if his improvement is for real, because Michigan's defense sure is.
Your notebook is going to be full the Sunday after the Notre Dame-Michigan game.
Absolutely.
A lot of interesting storylines. That's the My 5 question of the day from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. We have just about 3 minutes left in Sports Beat for tonight. NBA Western Final, is it going to live up to the hype? Not sure. The top-seeded Rockets lost at home to the second-seeded Warriors, 119-106. Watch from mid-third quarter on. It just looks like the Warriors are a better team, even though Houston has built their squad to beat Golden State. And if the Warriors win Game 2 in Houston, it sure seems like goodnight, Irene, down in Houston, as the Warriors look like the better team last night. Houston not known for their defense. Antonio, their head coach, not known for defense. I mean, Harden puts up 41, and they still lose by 13. That is not a good sign, and they did not have an answer for Kevin Durant last night. Around these parts in Eastlake, Ohio, a lot of eyes on the Boston-Cleveland game tonight in the East game, too. Boston won game one, 108-83. Marcus Morris, the story in game one, defended LeBron James about as well as you could do. And according to Second Spectrum data, Morris defended James on a team-high 39 possessions. The Cavaliers averaged a meager 89.7 points per 100 possessions with that matchup. Their offensive rating for the postseason, 108 for those 100 possessions. So that is a big, big difference. And even Morris helped the Celtics offensively, 21 points, 10 rebounds in 34 minutes, and the team was plus 25 when Marcus Morris was on the floor. He had some things to say before the series that he could slow down LeBron through one game. He's done an awfully good job. NHL Western Final last night in Winnipeg. The Golden Knights won 3-1 over the Jets. Series now one game apiece, heading back to Las Vegas. Keep in mind, the Knights were 500-1 in Las Vegas to win the Stanley Cup upon their existence coming about. And a lot of people could cash in if they win the Stanley Cup. And right now, they are 7 victories away. NHL East Game 3 tonight, Washington and Tampa Bay. Caps at home. They swept the two games in Tampa. They can take a stranglehold on the series. I thought Tampa would win the Stanley Cup after beating Boston, but maybe I'm thinking my team was a lot better than they were, because Tampa Bay has not looked good so far against a Capitals team that has a lot of confidence. They exercised demons by finally beating Pittsburgh in the last round, now up 2-0 on Tampa Bay. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. By Laban Insurance, the agency that rocks. See why at LabanInsurance.com. Blackthorn Golf Club and the Blackthorn Card. Get it for $99 and save up to 80% off rounds of golf at Blackthorn. That includes a cart. And we're also brought to you by Goshen Heart and Vascular. Be the hero your heart deserves. Visit GoshenHeartAndVascular.org. Eric, thanks for sticking around a couple of extra minutes. You are off tomorrow because we have a doubleheader again here in Eastlake, Ohio. So I will talk to you, I guess, on Friday, because I'm traveling on Thursday. I'm avoiding you at all costs, as you can tell.
Oh, we'll have a wonderful, heartfelt reunion on Friday.
Yeah, we sure will. Eric, I'll talk to you then.
Sounds good.
All right. We will take a break. Brendan King will have pregame for South Bend Cubs baseball next from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.